Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard, along with our company's founder, Tom Grandy. This month's program is titled, Overcoming Conflict at Work. This month, we're going to eavesdrop in on a conversation between Brian Orr at the HVACR School podcast and Andy Holt of Top Rate Services. The topic concerns conflict at work. If you can breathe and you have a job, likely you've been in more than one situation involving some kind of conflict. The question is, how did you handle it?
Well, Bill, you're right. We've all been in conflict situations. The podcast will provide lots and lots of practical tips on topics like how to deal with anger issues in others, transitional phrases to use with the customer on how to handle customers that have had conflict and with previous techs who came out and didn't do the job properly, things of that nature. Bill, this presentation is full of practical suggestions involving all levels of relationships from the boss to the customer.
Oh, you're right, Tom. There really are some great tips in this presentation. Hopefully, our listening audience will get, grab a piece of paper, a pencil, take some notes from this thing. The podcast host is Brian Orr. Brian is the co-founder and president of KLO Services. He has been involved in the HVAC training industry for over 13 years. Brian started the HVAC school to provide free HVACR training across many mediums, for techs, by techs. Brian works with many organizations as an industry, business, and marketing consultant. With a sharp wit and a sense of humor, Brian has quickly become one of the most powerful and recognizable voices in the HVACR industry, covering everything from duct fabrication to installation in his wildly successful HVAC School podcast. Brian is interviewing Andy Holt of Top Rate Services. Andy has worked with techs within the industry for over 20 years and has the stories, quite frankly, to prove it. And now, with Overcoming Conflict at Work, here is Brian Orr interviewing Andy Holt with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation.
Hey, 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 this is the HVAC School Podcast. I'm Brian, and yes, my voice is messed up. Yesterday, I had no voice at all, but luckily, I got my voice back enough to be able to talk to our good friend, Andy Holt, from TopRate.com, an outdoor university. Andy is a specialist when it comes to dealing with customers, soft skills, overcoming conflict, and that is exactly what we're going to talk about today, is overcoming conflict. And I'm going to be overcoming the conflict of barely being able to speak. So here we go. Andy Holt talking about overcoming conflict at work. Thanks for joining us again on the HVAC School Podcast, Andy.
Hi, Brian.
It's good to have you back on. It's been a while. My weird voice and all. We're going to dive into a topic that I don't know that I've actually ever directly covered, and that's the idea of conflict resolution and how to not only resolve conflicts, but hopefully to find ways to prevent them in the first place. Andy is a real expert when it comes to the customer satisfaction, overall team communication sort of thing. You may know him from some of the outdoor trainings that he's done with Jim Bergman and a lot of other things. And of course, if you want to find out more, go to toprate.com. But to get started, Andy, I want to just ask your own experiences. How have you learned so much over the years about conflict resolution and customer communication and all that? Where did you get your start in learning how to deal with these things?
Being a Navy brat, the first 18 years of my life conditioned me to meet new people all the time. Every 2 years, brothers, we pick up and move from Hawaii to California to Virginia, back to Hawaii, Wisconsin, Florida. And through those experiences, we were always the new kids on the block. Therefore, we always had to kind of merge in, if you will, to an existing group. Or in my case, I played baseball and we were always the new kids, that kind of thing. It was made a little easier because normally we're around other Navy kids, military kids. So they understand that. But part of that was learning how to get along with people early on. And it served me well throughout my life.
When you see, because again, you've interacted with thousands and thousands of different technicians and business owners and just people who work in the trade over the years. When you see people who struggle with conflict, meaning they find themselves in maybe more conflicts than they should, what are some key personality traits that can lead to that maybe we need to be able to recognize in ourselves? I'm a big believer in being able to see yourself appropriately. And so for people who maybe find themselves in these situations, what are some things you would say to them right away that they might want to identify in themselves?
Well, I think sometimes it's just a matter of understanding that you may have an issue. So the first thing I would suggest is pay attention to how others react to the exact same situation that you're in. And if you constantly see that you have a lot of stress, a lot of negativity or change type things bother you, then you certainly need to look internal and not external, because most things in life, as we all know now, we can't control. We can control, and the only thing we can control is how we react to those things. So by having, and I'm not saying this is easy, because a lot of this comes like instant reaction. A good example would be road rage. It literally takes somebody a half a second to go from maybe singing their favorite song to using every word they can. So that's kind of my evidence that things can happen real quick. But if you decide, for instance, people who used to have road rage, who no longer have road rage, what they had to go through was a mental, internal mental conditioning to say, you know what, when this comes up, this is how I'm going to handle it in advance. So I think the takeaway on this one would be decide that you're not going to go crazy or nuts when you hear something. You're going to think about it. You're going to dwell on it. And don't emotionally instantly respond to things. Slow it down. Think about it.
That's really good in so many different areas of life, not only just in conflict or in anger, frustration, but even in things as simple as if you're trying to lose weight, for example, or you're trying to get into an exercise routine. So often we have to just take enough time to think about what our natural reaction is to certain triggers and then design a new reaction. I used a weight loss program. A lot of you who listen to podcasts have probably heard of it. It's called Noom. And it's really interesting because what it teaches you to do is not just come up with a program of how to eat, but it helps you to think differently about how you eat and the choices that you make and the triggers that you encounter. And while it's certainly no, it's not a fix-all for everything, it is a nice start for those of us who struggle on the mental side of a lot of these things. So I think that's really great advice and probably a really good place to start. Let's start by just going through some common scenarios, or maybe not even scenarios, but just situations where people find challenges. What do you do if you're finding that you have consistent conflict with a particular coworker? And maybe it has to do with the fact that that coworker, as is the case in many situations, just brings their ego to the table all the time. And so they're maybe talking over you, maybe disrespecting you, or at least you feel disrespected by somebody. How would you approach a scenario like that in order to help try to bring some resolution to it?
That's an everyday scenario, isn't it? The response, I guess, would be a little different. I would give you two different responses. One would be, is it your boss that has got you unnerved and pissed off? And is it your boss, somebody who has direct control of your employment there, versus a peer or a teammate, right? And I think, honestly, those would have two different flavors. Dealing with peers, basically, it's a matter of, in some cases, if you've been nitpicking back and forth with that person for weeks and months and it's elevated to an open sore, something's got to give there, right? Somebody else is going to be noticing this and you guys are affecting the rest of the team. That's one thing I always want you to keep in mind. Internal bickering, gossiping, and things like that, nothing but cancer on your team. You lose a lot of respect from your teammates, by the way, by being that guy. The idea would be to, if you have a conflict with a guy, you literally go up to him and just sit down and talk man to man and say, here's what I think I've done to contribute to this problem, things like that. Don't point out what they've done. And this is the best ending of that scenario, is you stick your hand out and you look at the guy right dead in the eye and you say, hey, look, can we start over? Can we pretend like we just met and forget everything that just happened? And that may sound a little too basic for some people, but it honestly is a great, great way to physically begin a new relationship with a handshake and a solid eye gaze and sincerity in your heart. I've seen that work very well.
Yeah, I find that time and time again that if somebody needs to make the first move, then it needs to be you in every situation.
That's right.
And just count on that. Because when somebody else is the one who makes the first move, well, that is great and excellent. You just can't count on that. The part of that equation you can control is yourself. And you're going to find that in many cases, that other person is going to reciprocate that vulnerability, because that's what you're doing. You're showing vulnerability. You're saying, I'm willing to admit my part of this. even if it's only a small part, even if it's only 1%, and you go and you admit your 1% without nitpicking their side of it, you're going to find that a lot of people are going to say, no, you know what? I've had this going on. I've had trouble in my personal life and I've taken it out on you. And in many cases, they're going to open up with vulnerability as well. And in many cases, they won't. And if they don't, that's still okay because you've done your part of the equation at that point. While you may not completely heal the situation, in many cases, you're going to at least feel a lot better about it, which is going to make you act better moving forward as well.
When I'm consulting with owners, and I've been on this side of the fence too in our family business, when we have to let somebody go, man, you know how bad that hurts. The discussion that comes from that separation can be very positive. You don't have to, let's just say, agree to disagree. You don't have to leave in conflict in that situation. Be the bigger guy. Be the better man. Gosh, look out in society right now, everybody. And couldn't we all use a handshake, a little more respect, and let's give a little more respect too, because our country really needs that right now.
That feeling of deserve, I did a short video on this the other day, this feeling of I'm entitled to this respect from this other person, and if they don't give it to me, by golly, I'm going to keep this feud going. It just only leads to more and more damage. So being the person who's willing to bridge that gap and say, look, I'm not going to allow my entitlement to get in the way of being vulnerable, of confessing maybe my part to the situation, will lead to a lot more healing. You had mentioned the boss-employee relationship. So if it's your boss that you're having trouble with, because heaven knows that never happens, what are some of your top tips of dealing with that if you're starting to feel that pent-up emotion begin to rise?
The first thing is to make sure that the emotion is not generated internally. In other words, don't all of a sudden get yourself all worked up about, hey, I'm supposed to be the service manager. I should have been promoted by now and all those things. Those conversations need to happen early on, and don't do any prejudgment about what things or how things should be with the boss, because unless you guys have talked about the situation, honestly, you have no idea what the plans are. And things like that. But if you have a conflict with a boss, and of course, you see a good potential of work, you want to stay there and everything else is good except for the boss, it's really good idea to go in there and make sure, number one, that you're doing everything that the boss expects you to do. And a good way to do that is a lot of guys go in and ask for a raise. For instance, as this is a good example, where there's some pent-up conflicts weeks and months in advance before they actually get the nerve to come knock on your door, Brian. So they've been thinking about and getting the nerve up to ask you, rather than to go in and talk about, hey, how about a raise, or I need a raise and things like that. What if I knocked in, made an appointment with you, Brian, at a convenient time for you? That's the first thing I would recommend. Don't catch the boss at a bad time. And the second thing is I would go in there and I would say, hey, Brian, is there anything I need to do to improve? Can you help me? Because a lot of you guys work for companies that don't do any annual or semi-annual evaluations where you have this, I think it's extremely important time with the boss or your direct report to be able to ask, how am I doing, in an open, frank way. Also have some numbers on your side. Say, hey, I've done this or I've done that. I've completed these schools. The boss may not even know your personal training, things like that, stuff you've been doing on the side. Watching videos, using MeasureQuick on learning this stuff, different things like that. They may not be aware of that. But if you have a conflict, you need to be open and honest about it. Just understand you can't control the response, but you can't live this way if you're under a lot of pressure. That's called adapted behavior. The problem with adaptive behavior is it takes a lot of energy. And for you to have not to be natural and comfortable and loose around your boss, then that's just not a good long-term solution. It's not a good place to work when you have to do that.
Yeah, and I think you pointed out what a lot of times the gripe is with a leader. Now, there are exceptions to this, and I think it's worth going into some of those. But before we get there, a lot of times the gripe is a perceived slight of some sort. I feel like I'm being treated this way, or I don't feel as respected, or I feel like things are going in the wrong direction, or in many cases, I'll hear people say, I've been here so long and I haven't had this promotion or I haven't had this raise, but without any actual explicit conversation saying that you would. In many cases as well, I was made to believe that such and such would happen. But when you actually dig into it, there isn't that level of clarity, which to your point, and I want to get your thought on this, I think that's what we want you to drive at when you're interacting with leadership is go ahead and work to get those agreements. Go ahead and work to get that clarity from leaders and get it in writing if possible, but not in a pushy way, not in a frustrated way, but with some facts behind it. Not just, I feel this way, I feel that way. But like you said, saying, I've worked on this certification. I've learned this new skill. I've decreased my callback rate. I've begun to lead and train others and being very specific about what those things are, at least from where I sit. People who interact with me based on facts and who are working towards agreement versus working towards your leader being required to uphold some end of a bargain that they never made, I think is much more productive.
Absolutely. We can set ourselves up for failure just through our own thoughts and actions. So the takeaway here would be proactive, double check. Here's another thing. Sometimes things that make you mad with somebody are traits that you actually possess. That's longstanding psychology. So be careful about, I don't like that guy because, well, often that's a little bit of a mirror. And sometimes we don't like to see what's in the mirror.
Yeah, very true. What about cases where it's an employer or maybe even a coworker who is, maybe has a temper and maybe not just latent, but actually does a little swearing at you or that sort of thing where it's a little bit over the line by any standard? What are some ways that you would suggest overcoming those sorts of conflicts where clearly somebody else has crossed the line?
First of all, you only deal with that once. That's a red line. And when somebody loses their cool and goes out of character and things like that, that proves to you that they've been holding back. They've been working and living under some kind of adaptive behavior. They haven't been open and honest about what's making them mad and things like that. So that alone is a problem. But boy, if somebody starts cussing and screaming, I've got experience with that. And I basically throw on the phone or something like that and say, hey, Tom, listen, man, you better stop it right now because we're not going to continue like this. And if the next word's a cuss word, they're going to hear a dial tone. I disengage from that kind of situation. I'm not a fighter that way. I'd rather deal with people on a more calm setting. And for all these years, I've been able to do that mostly.
And I do think that's a really good trait to be able to say, look, this is a work relationship. And maybe I did make a mistake, but we're going to have boundaries here. And one of those boundaries is, we're all going to get frustrated sometimes. We all might get a little hotter under the collar where maybe our tone changes or get a little cranky in our body language. But when you start actually swearing at somebody, you start calling somebody names, you start degrading somebody. And like you said, you draw that line in the sand and say, okay, this needs to stop right now and it needs to never happen again. Can you agree to that? Because if you can't agree to that, then I can't work here.
You can't work here. And I was on a training consulting mission one time. And I happened to be there the morning that the boss, we were there early, and he said, hey, sit in on this meeting. And he had two of his managers come in. And these two were at each other's throat, apparently. And I was just briefly about it. So I sat in on the meeting. Anyway, the owner took care of identifying the situation. They both agreed and they both said the right words. And then when they got up, the boss asked him, say, hey, go ahead and shake hands, because neither one of them were going to do that. And one of the managers refused to shake the other guy's hand. And he was at that point relieved of his employment. When he could not do that, that was it. This was not an inexpensive manager. This guy just had his ego got to him and he just said, that's it. I can't imagine having so much angst against somebody where you just couldn't say, you know what? Yeah, let's move on. I understand what you said. But anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
When it happens, it's cancer, man. You got to get rid of it. You cannot deal with that. Everybody knows in their company, you got the hothead. He basically he shuts down all conversation. He's negative Nancy in the meetings. He's going to want to bring, yeah, what about such and such? He's always going to bring up the negative. And I think some of that's for attention. It's like a version of the class clown, but they really don't understand how negative that is and how they're perceived by others.
Yeah, and that's the job of leadership, to nip that stuff in the bud and to communicate proactively too. And I think I just want to take a second here and talk about the other way, because more and more, this is an environment where workers hold a lot of power. And I've seen a lot of leaders of organizations look the other way when people are really behaving poorly, and then letting that build up and then maybe knee-jerk reaction, maybe fire them or freak out on them or that sort of thing. I'm a big advocate, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, of rather than firing people on the spot or making these big demonstrations, of if something happens where somebody's been inappropriate, just send them home for a couple of days and think about how to best handle it. So that way you're really making the best decision for the organization, but being willing to pull that trigger a little sooner. I read a book called discipline without punishment, which is about a whole procedure of how to do that from like an HR standpoint, where rather than sending people home unpaid, you send them home paid. And basically, you give them one last shot to think about it and decide whether or not they want to make it work or not. But either way, I like that method because it prevents you from making a decision that you regret as a leader. And it also gives you a lever to pull so that way you don't feel so desperate. It gives you just a couple days to kind of work things through, which in a lot of cases where things are getting out of control, sometimes a little space is the best recipe to follow, at least in my experience.
Brian, I think that's an awesome technique to use. Everybody knows a cool-off period. We've all been there. Where it benefits us. We made a smarter decision when we waited. And in the heat of the battle, you were going to say and do things you wish you didn't. And these are career changing type of events if it's with the wrong person. And in fact, in some cases, that kind of information goes around a particular trade market and all of a sudden you're marked as a hothead. And you might be super tech, but they can't afford you from a culture standpoint. When you're merging in, you're the new guy. I don't care if you got all kind of experience or what. If you come to work at Kalos, you've never been there before, you have to merge into that culture. They really don't want to hear about how Uncle Fester taught you or how you did it up north or whatever. This is how we do it here. And those types of clear definitions of how we do it. And speaking of that, Brian, for instance, if the culture is strong enough in a company, you'll never hear employees or managers talking like that in open. There won't be, sure, you can get passionate about something, that's fine. But dog cussing somebody and disrespecting people like that never should be allowed, any level, anytime, any place.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So now moving to the customer side of the equation, let's talk about some of the most common objections that you get. And these aren't always huge conflicts, but they start someplace. One of the most common ones that people talk a lot about is pricing. So you go to replace that capacitor and the customer does the whole, well, on Amazon, that's only $15. And so why are you charging me this much? I think you're ripping me off. Let's say that the customer's not highly emotionally elevated, but they are pulling that card pretty quick. What are some ways that you would suggest overcoming that conflict, especially for people who are conflict averse and really don't like having those conversations?
The first thing I would tell you is quote that repair up front. Number one, better to have a little bit of discussion before you put the capacitor on than after it's installed and you got buttoned up and you're ready to go. So quoting your jobs up front with a firm price is the best way to go. In fact, the other tip I'd give you is never quote the contact or the capacitor, whatever, without saying something like this. The customers say, well, Andy, how much is the contactor? And I might say, the contactor installed is $87 and that includes a one-year warranty with the installation as well. And I'm automatically building the difference between that and the Amazon contactor, aren't I? And when he says, gosh, I can get that contactor for $17 on Amazon, what's the difference? Well, what's the difference is I've got the contactor right now. I've got the correct contactor. I've got the skill and tools to safely install the contactor. And number three, I'm going to guarantee my contactor for 1 year. Does Amazon do any of those?
No, absolutely not. Right.
That's kind of how I teach or coach guys to at least think of a couple bullet points. And again, say it with due respect and things like that. And also with some understanding. Say, hey, I got you. I understand. And if that's not enough, you can point to the $70,000 truck with the $6,500 of inventory and the 70 to 90, whatever. You can go on. But I have found that those are useless conversations, honestly. The more facts you throw out like that, you're wasting your time.
Yeah, I think one of the first challenges for a technician is if they don't understand the pricing. And so if you feel like your company is too expensive, then you need to have that conversation with your owner or manager to understand how the pricing has come to. So that way you understand that it is not too expensive, because the truth is that it's not. It's what it pays for your livelihood. And especially small service parts have to be marked up a lot in order to make sense of overhead and everything else that it takes. That fully loaded labor, a fully burdened labor is very expensive. And so get your head around that, because once your head's around that, then you can do verbal bundling, which is exactly what you did there. You bundled together the warranty and the installation with the part. And now you've clarified to that customer, but you can even go beyond that, because in companies that will allow it, and we do this at Kalos, you do a full diagnosis of the system. And you're never just leaving that capacitor as an orphan. You're doing the capacitor, you're cleaning up the wiring, you're restrapping it, you're making everything really neat, you're using a new metal strap, you're mounting it upright, maybe you need to wash the condenser coil. Maybe you need to clean the drain line. There's always these sorts of common things that come up as part of a unit, especially one that hasn't been well maintained, which most of them aren't. And so now, rather than just quoting the capacitor, you can give a little verbal list of things and say, all that together is going to cost XYZ. Now, if the customer says, well, what about just the capacitor? Now you can back it down, but so rarely do they do that. Most of them would much rather have everything solved that needs solving. Bundling that all together with a warranty often makes so much more sense and avoids that unnecessary conversation, because we're not trying to hide anything from the customer. We just don't want to have to explain every single time why things cost what they cost. As long as you're comfortable with it and you know why it has to cost what it costs, that's really all you need to do. And the customer's going to say yes or no.
Yeah. When you tell them that the motor is $427 installed, and that includes a 1-year warranty and all the installation work, you just never tell them how much it is. You always tell them what you're going to do and what kind of warranty that you're going to have with it.
Yep. It's the service that matters.
The other thing, before I forget about it, is the transition phrase to remember is when you're doing that mental bundling, I love that term, by the way, is while I'm here. If the technician will begin, hey, you got a contactor, but while I'm here, I notice these other things. And all you got to do is point them out. Physically go point them out. In most cases, we can take to a customer to it and show them. You don't have to rely on a lot of verbal skills here. Let me show you a couple things. And I found that most people are interested in looking actually at their unit. And of course, you got to pick your battles. If you're in the villages and it's in the attic, so there's certain places we're not going to do that. But in most places, we can do that. And that basically proves that you have nothing up your sleeve. As long as you're pointing to the right stuff and telling the right story and proving to them, you could show them the contactor that's got the discolored contacts on it. You see what I'm saying? You could even go technically and say, well, look at do a measurement here. You get technical with them if you need to. Show them the resistance that particular contactors exceeding or right there at it.
So be demonstrative. Show them what you're actually seeing. Be honest about it. Don't make stuff up. Obviously, if you've got questions technically and you need to get those questions answered, get those answered first before you start telling the customer things. But yeah, as long as you're being honest, you're being truthful, you're well-educated, then do a little bit of that demonstration so that way the customer recognizes that you're an expert and that they're buying a service. They're not just buying a part, and you can't buy a service on Amazon in that way.
You can't. And the other thing I would tell you is don't try to overcome everything. Sometimes no is a perfectly good answer. If the customer says no, thank you, on the UV light right now, don't hammer and open out. Well, you don't know. Let me show you. Not a good strategy. And that, again, shows disrespect. That falls under the disrespect category, because we disrespect people when we don't read what they're telling us. If you're saying, no, I don't want that, then they really don't want it.
That's huge. That's what good integrity looks like. Ethics in business is that we're not trying to push the customer into anything. We want to overcome conflict. We don't want there to be problems. And that's what we're talking about here. But we're not trying to make people buy things they honestly don't want to buy.
Brian, well, last thing on that, and I'm so sorry, because there's some technicians that are sitting out there probably listening to this going, yeah, they just want me to sell more stuff. The guy needs a contactor, and Brian's going on about all the other stuff, and Andy's saying bundle this and blah, blah, blah. Guys, this is a gut check. Tell me what you think. Do we have a bigger problem in the industry of technicians selling too much stuff on a service call? Or do we have a bigger problem of technicians not being thorough enough in finding the things that are really legitimately needing attention? And I'll let the audience decide.
Yeah. And I think that depends on, I think largely it's not being attentive enough. The worst cocktail of all is when they're not attentive and they're trying to sell boxes of indoor air quality products on top of it without being attentive to the technical. But I'm certainly advocating be attentive to the technical first and foremost. Go through the cleanliness of the equipment, go through and check all the obvious things that are going to be common fail points that are going to lead to callbacks and possible customer frustration. Which brings me to the next question, which I think is one of the more difficult ones for technicians to deal with. What do you do when you're maybe the third or fourth guy back out there and that customer has experienced a bunch of callbacks and has not received a resolution to their problem? And now they're really griping at you about your company, about the last guy there, and they're throwing that all back on you.
You're bringing up some old memories. Well, the first thing you do is admit the obvious. And whatever you have to do, take every bit that they give you with, this is the fourth time you're going, you know, and this other technician didn't know what he was doing. And you need to attentively listen to that. Don't necessarily respond if possible. Okay, so let's get that first part out of the way. The other thing that you need to establish, and this might even be a good opening line to use, would be, Mr. Orr, I'm the fourth technician here. State the obvious. I'm the fourth technician here in 10 days to fix or to look at this problem. I understand you spent $19,000 on this brand new system. I totally understand that. But I will tell you, regardless of how much you spent, I'm really here to get to the bottom of the problem. And I need to get after it. And I'm sorry about the other three guys that have been here, or four guys that have been here. But I'm going to do everything in my power to, number one, repair the problem, and number two, let you know exactly what's going on with your machine.
I like that because it shows attentiveness. So starting with listening, like you said, that's the first thing. Let them vent. Let them say whatever they need to say. Make it clear that you're listening without any attack. And then own the problem yourself. Just saying, I hear you. I heard everything you said. And I am focused 100% on getting this resolved for you. Show them that you're totally focused. If there's something that needs to be reiterated, you can repeat it back to them. All right, what I'm hearing is your primary concern is that you're not getting airflow to this back bedroom. You've already had a new return put in, so on and so forth. Is that right? That's the number one thing. And then number two is this, number three is that. Am I hearing that correctly? Okay, great. I'm going to focus on this problem first. I'll get back to you with what I find, and then we'll move on to the next one. And I'm going to stay here as long as it takes until we get this all resolved. That sort of a thing is taking ownership of the problem.
And fortunately, with the type of tools we can use right now, we can go to that bedroom and pre-measure 87 CFM, let's say, and then we've done our adjustment, our balance, maybe we found the flex duct kink, whatever, remeasure at 110. Those types of measurements will validate what you did. Using the handometer doesn't work all the time.
Yeah, and that brings up the next thing that I wanted to talk to you about, which is how can we use technology in some cases? I mean, I think you just gave a great example. You've got the Easy Hood by CPS as a great example of a tool that technicians can now afford that would allow you to do that. It would allow you to test in and then test out and actually show that change that you made. Do you see value in that? And what are some other things that you would probably practice if you were in the field today?
Oh, huge. And if I was in the field today, I would be using tools like MeasureQuick. And the reason I would use tools like MeasureQuick is, number one, it automates my workflows. If I'm doing a specific type of task, it really keeps me on that task. Number two, it's going to give me, unlike I could do before years ago in the 80s and the early 90s, you couldn't get simultaneous pressures and readings, critical readings. Because one thing we have to all understand is everything on the refrigeration side of AC is all about math, 100% math. And all those type of interpretations, or again, what your uncle taught you or what you learned at some school out in Arizona, whatever, all that doesn't matter if the math doesn't add up. So by using things like MeasureQuick, you can hold up your tablet or your phone and actually show the customer the live results. And we couldn't do that before. We could show them pressures, but most people understand, or it's easily understood, the capacity and BTUs and things like that. But being able to show the customer a live output of what we've done, what the current situation is, our recommendation for making it better. And then once we do the work, be it a cleaning or an adjustment, now testing out and showing the customer the results. Because years ago, if we cleaned up a unit and got it all clean, the blower and everything, we never did check to see how many BTUs we restored. But knowing what I see now, we're routinely restoring 7 to 12,000 BTUs on residential systems. Guys, that's huge. That is huge. Anyway, so those are the reasons I like the newer tools, and I'm very, very excited about the future.
Yeah, and it can help resolve some real customer questions. Customers who maybe have lost confidence that you can solve the problem, now you can test in and test out and make facts your friend. Make facts the tool that an ethical technician can use to help resolve that problem in the customer's mind.
That's correct.
I think that's excellent.
Brian, thanks a lot. And thanks for having me on. Really love what you guys do, and a huge supporter. If you want to contact me, you can call me 706-888-2332 if you have any questions, or you can go right to our website, www.toprate.com. Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, thank you so much, Andy. Look forward to seeing you again next time. Hopefully you can make it down to the symposium. It would be great to see you there. But yeah, really valuable stuff for technicians out there with conflict resolution. And I'm sure we will talk again very soon.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate you having me.
Big thanks to Andy for coming on the podcast. As we have recently talked about, Soft skills are important, and how you treat people is important. In fact, probably more important than even your technical knowledge, because we can all learn more technical knowledge when we focus on it. But if you're the type of person nobody wants to do business with, it doesn't do you much good. Speaking of being around people, we're going to be at AHR in Force in Las Vegas here in just a little bit, probably only a week or so after this podcast comes out. And then we also have the symposium coming up at our offices in Claremont. Find out more by going to hvacrschool.com/symposium to get your virtual ticket or your in-person ticket. We have a few in-person tickets left, at least at the time of this recording. We might be sold out by the time it comes out, so don't blame me if you didn't act fast enough. And then also we have a video out on YouTube that talks about everywhere that we're going to be for AHR, for the symposium, for the FRACA conference, for the educators conference. If you want to meet up and meet us, or me, from HVAC school, those are all the places you can do it, and I do look forward to meeting you. Do you know why the pony had to gargle salt water? Because he was a little horse. That one hits a little too close to home. All right, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.